Hey guys, I'm Brad.
I'm Lisa.
And welcome to Unrelenting Pursuit.
We just want to invite you guys into real, unedited conversations about real life topics that affect your marriage.
Yeah, guys, we are passionate about training and equipping marriages to succeed through God.
Hey, welcome back to season 8. We have an interesting episode today.
Oh, I thought you were going to introduce a guest, and I was looking around. There's nobody here.
Our guest is Brad Valencia today. Before we jump in, I do want to start off with a review from one of you guys. Yet again, we want to pause and say thank you to those of you who have left a review. If you haven't, please go leave one. We would love to see that. And it really does help other people to find us and have some hope for their marriage. Mm-hmm. So this one is from Not My Life to Live. It says, raw and full of hope. I found this podcast after my husband confessed to an affair in the beginning of our marriage. Even though it had occurred so long ago, it still sent me into a tailspin. Brad and Lisa are helping us work through things through their raw and hopeful words.
That's cool.
So thank you for sharing that. We love to know that we can bring some hope to those places. So I always, like, Brad is the one who actually talked about talking about this today.
No, I didn't.
Well, we've been getting a lot of questions regarding this topic, and I like to throw things out at Brad randomly when, you know, give him different questions that he isn't prepared for whenever we actually do an episode. But we have for a long time kind of danced around, I guess that's the right way to think of it, danced around what you actually do for a living. Because if you don't know, we do not do this full time.
Oh, yeah. This isn't our living.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Yeah. One day we hope that we can dive into that more. But
not today.
You know, all this stuff is done in our, you know, just spare time, basically, as you have a full-time career and have had that for how many years now?
21 years.
Yeah. So we are going to actually talk about what Brad does, because we kind of chuckled about this because...
We so have talked about this.
Because we somehow created like a secret, and it's not a secret. Like
this big mystery. We were at a speaking event, and I was giving, you know, we were both up there, and I was giving my testimony. And later we found out, like, in the audience, there's people that, you know, came there because they had heard our podcast, and they, you know, followed us, whatever. And they were like, he's about to say what he does for a living.
And it was like, really like, go, like this huge big secret.
And I didn't.
And there's a lot of reasons why that is.
Yeah, it's inadvertently created this whole thing.
Yeah, and so we're going to dispel the
last thing I've ever wanted is this whole, you know, spotlight on this or whatever. Like, yeah. We had no, you know, attention. We didn't intend for any of this mystery to be going on.
Correct.
So it's just super weird to us, clearly.
Yeah. Right. Well, and part of, you know, your big thing is that you no longer have this as like your identity.
Yeah. What I do is not a secret. And that's what people kept thinking. And I wanted to say what I do, but the reason I haven't pushed it is, one, this field is saturated with people in podcasts and doing YouTube, and it's like, you know, a field that a lot of people go right into that and they start doing this.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of like a saturated field, and that's not where my heart is, you know? And I don't brag about things I do. Like, I, you know, it's not something that I am like, oh, I'm this, and, you know, I want to brag about it. So it's just things, these are reasons why. And then my identity isn't in that, even though this is something I've done for 21 years, and then the specific stuff has been since 2009. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of years of doing, you know, in this career. So that's why we've never really talked. The political aspect, I don't really care about.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't bother me that much.
So you're going to say exactly.
Nope, that was it.
Okay. No,
we're done.
All right. So the mystery continues.
Yeah. No. So I joined the Border Patrol when I was, or in 2003, I don't know how old I was. In 2003, we, you know, went to the academy, graduated.
You don't have to say wee baby. That was the, I was your supporter, but yeah. I did not go through it. But, that's kind of like saying we were pregnant. I'm sorry for those of you who say like, no, I was pregnant. You helped me get pregnant. But,
no. So, you know, went to the academy, all that. And then we got stationed down in South Texas.
Yep.
And we were there for a long time. And yeah, this is why I say this market, this like podcast, you can look up podcasts on all tactical, all law enforcement stuff. And some are really good. Some, I just feel it's a saturated environment and that's not where I want to be. But anyway, so I did that for I've always done it. I'm still doing it. But in 2009, I decided to join or decided to throw my name in the ring, to go to selection for the unit I'm on now. And I didn't know what I was getting into really at all. I mean, I didn't. But that unit, I don't know why I'm having such a hard time talking about it.
You can do it, baby.
And it's called BORTAC. And it's just the special operations side of the Border Patrol. And we weren't very well known for a long time, which is fine. And now I think we're a little bit more well known, which again is fine. Actually, it's helped us in recruiting more people to come try out. Mm-hmm. Right. So I went through a selection course, and it was a lot different than it is now when I went through. But we started with, I don't know how many my class started with actually, but our attrition rate is anywhere from 75% to 78% that don't make it. Mm-hmm. And that held true to my class. 13 of us made it out of that. And there's out of the 13 of us, I think there's maybe 10 that are still active. Mm-hmm. One got killed in the line of duty during an op. And, but yeah, that's, you know, the selection process it was tough, very, very tough. Probably the hardest thing I had done to date in my life, physical, mental, you know, all the aspects. But there was a reason behind selection. If you know, we can have a whole episode on selection. That's not what we're doing. But it was just kind of like laying it out there because we've been getting DMs on, everyone knows I was a first responder. Or hinting to that, right? So being on the team that I'm on, you know, we have the opportunity to go and do things very specific and driven by intelligence and you know, all around, not just border specific. Like,
yeah, I want to say that just to, for all the of you that now want to DM us as to what's happening on the border. You haven't specifically worked the line since.
Yeah, so if you put it like in perspective of like a police officer, you have, you know, your patrol, right? And they're just out on the streets, you know, daily. And then you have your other, you know, maybe detective. I don't know where I would fall in that realm because we're not a SWAT team. We're very similar to a SWAT team, but we're not. Mm-hmm. We're really not a SWAT team. It's a lot more than that. It's very paramilitaristic what we do. Mm-hmm. And so we do have very tight parallel lines with other units in DOD that kind of do similar stuff that we do.
Some people are going to understand all of what you just said. Yep. And then some people are going to be like, I have no idea.
Just Google it. No. So, so I don't know. I know what's going on the border clearly, but yeah, I'm not in the weeds of it. And that's not what our unit's for.
Right.
Our unit's for very specific things that happen regularly. Yeah. And that's what they get called to do. Right now I'm not going to pretend like I'm still running and gunning with the operational teams. I'm not. I'm in a training cell environment. I still get called on to do things, but I've removed myself from the teams to help with all the training side and try to build something new. It was just a different phase that I thought, you know, should go do.
Which has been really nice for our family and for our ministry.
No, it has been. And a lot of the newer guys coming in and doing all their things, you know, of course, right? So that's where I'm at now. Like, I've still deployed and still get called to do things every now and then to help when there's stuff going on or emergent situations like locally that we get tasked to do. So yeah, that's been, and that's been a huge part of not just a career, but it's a lifestyle 100%. And, and there's selection for a reason. And, you know, so all of us are very similar and similarly in a mental state way. Mm-hmm. We're all very, very similar in that sense. And, yeah, I mean, those are like my brothers. I got to just recently hang out with one of my classmates for a few months. I hadn't seen him in a long time. That was a lot of fun, you know, just.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, the reason why we really wanted to touch on this subject, because obviously this has had a huge impact on our marriage, right?
Yep.
And, but also that the law enforcement world, the military world, first responder world, the impact on marriages is so intense. And the statistics for those marriages is really shocking. Yeah. And we really have a heart for that.
Absolutely. I mean, when I've given my testimony, you know, I always say I was traveling for work, and that's exactly what I was doing. I was doing operations within the United States, traveling around. And during that time is when, you know, my whole turning away from God and, you know, just going the route that I ended up going. And so that's, you know, that is part of this whole thing is part of our testimony. Right. And when we reconciled, I'm sure this could be a question that people are thinking right now, like, well, why are you still doing it? If that was something that, you know, enabled, I guess. Right. And, I was willing to walk away. And I told Lisa that, and that would have been a monster career shift, right? It really would have been. I don't know where we'd be right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I really don't. So I was willing to walk away from the team, and then go to do, you know, the big Border Patrol stuff. And I didn't want to. By any means, you know, this is kind of anyone that's listening that knows anything about, you know, like the, you know, team world of the military and all that. It's kind of like you don't want to leave once you get there. And, but I was willing to walk away from all of it to, you know, pursue our marriage and my relationship with Christ. And really what, you know, I didn't want this to become an issue because I was still active, right? Like, remember the very first, like, we had just moved down here, just kind of got our feet under us, and, you know, everything's moving along, and we're still kind of in a rocky place, you know? And I got tasked, a very small footprint, and got tasked with an op, and I couldn't even tell you where I was going, you know, specifically. And then I was going to be out of, you know, communication for how many days? It was like 3 days. I don't know. Something like that. And that was rough because, you know, literally it's like, okay, you know, you could just be off doing whatever you want. Like, you could be straight up lying to me right now, you know? So I was willing to walk away from it all. And, but you know, you supported me staying. I mean, that was a conversation we had.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, it was the willingness to do so that had a, had a big impact on me. And also the reality that, you know, you are working on your marriage or you love your spouse and to ask them to lay down something that they're, you know, wired and, or have worked so hard to do, and for it to fall on you, right? Like, that would be my decision was not something I wanted you to look at 10 years or 20 years down the road and think, man, I wish I had not done that, or I wonder what would have played out with that. I always really felt like those things had to come from you, you know, and I also knew that there was this aspect of no matter which job you were in, this had to be something much greater than that.
Yep.
And I think that's the distinction, right? It was like, oh, you know, a lot of times now, I think this is very different specifically in areas of, you know, when you're talking about people who have walked through a betrayal of trust, I think it's very different when someone is actively working with someone that you have had an affair with or something. Yep. That's a different realm.
Yeah, our team is not by design, but it is, it's male.
Yeah.
Right? There's been females in the past that have tried out and they just didn't make it, you know, and it's not by design. There's opportunity for someone like that, for a female to make it, but it just doesn't happen. And so, yeah, I'm usually just, the teams, right? It's just heavy in that. So I didn't have like any of, I could see like if someone was working with somebody, and I think we'll kind of get into that here in a minute. Because I think that's one of the issues too with law enforcement. And that's why, you know, Lisa said we got a DM and this kind of triggered all of it. And it was just from someone that was just like, hey, have you guys ever talked about, you know, the correlation between law enforcement and divorce rate? Mm-hmm. Right. And we haven't. I don't think we ever really have dove into this topic.
Not that specifically, yeah.
But it's a very real thing. You think you said earlier there was one statistic very recent in February, I think, of last year or this year?
This year.
This year in February, and it said 60 to 78% of law enforcement get divorced. Mm-hmm. Whether they stay divorced or, you know, maybe they have a second marriage or not, it doesn't matter. But 60 to 78% get divorced.
And 60 to 75
is to 75%. Yeah. And that's alarming. That's huge. It's concerning because the way I look at it is, so Christian or not, right? Christ follower or not. If you're God's wired you, so whether you believe it or not, right? I will. This is a generalization speaking because I can't go on a rant of there's a lot of police officers, law enforcement in different realms, different agencies that don't belong carrying a badge and a gun. They just don't. Mm-hmm. They think it's cool, and but then when it comes down to it, they don't. They cower and don't help anyone. And I'll tell that to those people's faces. Like, I believe that strongly. But the general speaking, right, of whole law enforcement, God wired you to do that. He wired you to stand in between civilians and evil. Like, he wired you to do protect. That, right? We're all men, specifically, men are called to protect, mm-hmm. right? And whether that's physical, spiritual, all aspects, right? And even if you're, you know, you have an office job, it doesn't matter. Like, you're called to protect in some way. And so with law enforcement, with first responders, or however, you know, we want to label it, all those people are wired to do that, generally mm-hmm. speaking. Again,
yeah, I know the guys. It's not normal to run into the fire. It's not normal to run towards bullets. It's not normal to, like, place yourself in danger. Yeah,
and it's so, it's interesting because, I mean, being around, and I'm talking like about our team specific, right? Because that's where I've grown up with all this, really. But it's not like if there's like gunfire, no one's flinching and thinking about moving away. Everyone's like, all right, here we go, and they just start running towards it, right? Or moving towards it, or doing whatever they have to do. Like it doesn't. It's not a thought. The other thoughts don't come in your head, right? That's how they're wired to be. So we're wired to protect. And I think that with God's purpose in our lives, wired to protect, wired to do this, to sacrifice as a whole, right? We're all called to sacrifice, but these are people, and, you know, I mean, I'd die for someone I have no idea who they are, right? And that's what all this, that's what happens when you sign this dotted line. Whenever you decide to do this, is you're saying that, you know, I'm going to step in front of, you know, quote unquote weaker, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like not
the undefended. Yeah. Or
yeah. I'll step in front of that to help. Right. And I'm not special. There's hundreds and thousands of people that do this. But with that, I think that's why the enemy hits this so hard. Because these people are stepping up to make a difference against evil, right, in some way. They're not just, you know, I've never met a cop that just wants to write speeding tickets. Like, you know, everyone I've met and talked to, at least if they're being truthful with me, they're, you know, they became what they became because of really what it boils down to is because they want to fight evil on another level, right? That's, I mean, why did I join the Border Patrol and then join the team that I'm on that, you know, I lost, I don't know, I looked like a POW prisoner when I was done with selection. And really, and nothing ever's been comfortable since, right? And why did I want to do something more than just what I was normally doing? I don't get paid more for it. I don't get anything extra for it. And it's just simply because you want to do another level of that standing, you know, in the gap, so to speak, right?
Right.
But I think that that's why there's such a high divorce rate in law enforcement, and it's because the enemy, you know, like it attacks you, right? Just like marriages, you know, I mean, this is specifically marriages, but I'm talking like as a whole, law enforcement, they have a hard time. They get attacked a lot. I'm not talking about physical stuff. Yes, clearly. But I mean, on the mental and spiritual level, like even if you're not following God, and that's kind of where I'm getting at, is you're still doing good works, right? And good comes from God, you know? So if you're doing good works, like you're doing what God wants you to do in that sense. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not saying that good works get you anywhere to God or any of those things. It's just like,
no, you can't work yourself. The distinction
between good and evil.
Yeah. You can't work yourself to
salvation. Heaven.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. So we want to get into this. I know there's like some actual topics for law enforcement. I read a little bit, but I don't know what you have.
Well, I just think, you know, I wanted to touch base with you. I mean, there's so many aspects, I think, that are, you know, areas of your job and what you guys do that, you know, almost create this environment towards separation from your family, separation from your spouse. For you specifically, how do you feel like that was in your life? Was it just the physical separation that allowed, you know, more of this complete separation in our marriage? Or were there other factors that you feel were there beforehand that kind of contributed?
Before
the actual, like, you know, physical breach in our marriage, do you feel like there were things that led up to that?
I mean, as far as like marriage specific, I stand by, you know, we just had our normal marriage, so I don't think anything from that side
led
up to it.
Well, can I pick a little bit in these things that I want to dig into a little bit? Well, because I think I know once I say this, you're gonna agree with all of these different things. Like, number one, I think schedule is a really big deal.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about that. So, you know, my schedule before I decided to go to selection and do all that stuff, my schedule was, I think I did 6 weeks at every shift. Mm-hmm. So it was like blocks. So 6 weeks of days, 6 weeks of swings, 6 weeks of mids, and then rotate, you know, back days, swings, mids. And that was how my year went. Days is probably the easiest, I would say, to stay connected, you know, with your spouse is more normal.
Especially if you have two people that are working, you know, it's like at that time I was as well. So it's like, okay, at least then you're both working.
Yeah. So we'd probably both be home by no later than 5. And, you know, you have your normal, right? You know, normal people. And then swings, I think, was probably the hardest because that's working. You start working when everyone gets off work and then you get home when everyone's asleep, kind of deal.
We're trying to like adjust our schedule to you. So it's like, okay, you're trying to stay up later then so that we can see each other. And it just like, there was never like this rhythm, you know, or I could never rely on you to be there for all these major events, right? No. There was never like, oh, you're guaranteed to be here for this. Or, you know, when something came up with friends or family or church, it was like, we'll see if Brad can be here.
Yes and no. So it was more controlled before we moved and got on the team.
Yeah.
After that, it became more sporadic where it was unknown, right? Like you can make plans, but ultimately, you know, your phone goes off and you're gone. Or you're at work and something kicks off and it's like, hey, I got to get back and, you know, get ready. Like we're leaving tomorrow or whatever, right? Yeah. Maybe it wasn't as emergent as just a hasty thing. So yeah, that was really hard. And so I would have to cancel a lot, or you would have to cancel a lot.
Yeah. And I also learned to a certain extent, a level of independence that really in some ways is unhealthy, you know, because it's not that it wasn't a necessity at the time, but also I think can create that aspect of that you can just begin to operate solely by yourself and even as a parent or, you know, as a spouse, really with the idea that I can run this all on my own.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was hard to establish a normal that was normal, if that makes sense. Cause you know, there was times I'd be gone for 6 weeks. There'd be times I'd be gone for 2 weeks, you know, and then there's a whole, you know, physiological side of that where you're gone and you're, you know, running and doing stuff. And so you're constantly like in this, you know, hypervigilant, not hyper, but you know,
yeah,
you're on.
Your stress responses are.
Yeah, you're on. And then you come home and it takes a couple of days to like, I'm home, you know? And then you kind of get in a routine and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm gone. You know, and I think that I'd handle a lot better now than I did then, because a lot of stuff I know now. And I think that the guys that are doing this, right, I think they handle a lot better, probably, some of them, than I did. And it wasn't like I'd come home and be all crazy. Like, I never did that. But I know there was times I'd come home and you would tell me, like, I was acting weird. But I was just kind of, like, quiet. Mm-hmm. But I was just trying to, like, come back into the fold, right? And so, yeah, I think that definitely hinders connection with your spouse. And if you're not intentional, like all the other stuff we talk about, you know, intentionally dating, intentionally spending time with each other, you know, kids come second, right? You know, all these things. And if you're not doing that, then you are going to fall to, because you're going to fall to distance, and that distance is going to create a chasm. And then, like we talked about a few episodes ago, where, you know, you kind of viewed my traveling as that was my getaway and my vacation, when that was actually like the most work I was doing, you know? And so then I'd come home and, you know, you'd be resentful to an extent. Like, you weren't walking around just mean mugging me, but
yeah, you know. I think what happens is, you know, when you do create that almost isolated realms as a husband and a wife, right, where you have your operations and then, you know, the home front is an operation in and of itself, you know, and trying to find the balance of, you know, kind of combining those worlds it takes a lot of effort. And I think in a lot of times it's easier to keep them separate. Mm-hmm. And so then when you're trying to balance that back together, it's like this awkwardness. Like, I wanted you to come home and be like so enthusiastic to be home. Mm-hmm. And you were like trying to press, like, you know, decompress, like here you've had this high amount of like pressure, right? You're in this intense stress state really for a majority of the time that you're gone, having to process so much information, having to think really quickly on the ground, and then you're coming home and I want you to be like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so excited to see you guys.
It's weird though hearing you say that, because it doesn't feel like that when you're going. It doesn't feel like, oh, because I'm all this intense pressure, all this intense. Yeah. Yeah. So it is weird. But that did 100% contribute. So two things that contributed to, like, What should we call it? Like, my fall?
Sure. Is that, why not?
I don't know.
My demise.
My demise. Two things that, I mean, there's multiple things, but what you're getting at is, the distance created those chasms, and then it was hard to bring that back when I'd get home. And then, I've always say this, and I'll say it over and over and over and over again. Like, you can combat all those things if you do have your true relationship with Christ, if it is grounded and it's rooted. So now, like, when I've had to go, you know, be gone 2 months, do things like that, like, it was hard, of course, you know, miss you guys, but there was no, like, well, I wonder what they're going to do. Like, mm-hmm. are we, you know, I didn't feel awkward coming home.
Yeah.
I felt like it was just get back home, you know, and I didn't feel like there was a missing a beat or anything like that. But now, where's my priority? Right.
Yeah.
Yes, work was high on that list because that's what I was going to do, but my walk with Christ remained the same. You know, it had to, right? Or, you know what I mean? It not remained the same because I always want to grow, but
yeah,
it had to have that steadiness of this
the
is
solid rock. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so traveling a lot, being away from home a lot, you start to compromise a lot. And you start, you know, maybe at the beginning you're very strict on yourself on what, you know, you'll do, what you won't do, you know, I won't stay out late, I won't do this, whatever it may be. But then as you're gone longer, that, you know, you start compromising. That's really what it all comes down to. You just start compromising little bits at a time until, like, for me, like, from my testimony, compromising. And then I'm staying out later and later and later. And now, like, I'm noticing, you know, feeding into those insecurities, right? I'm noticing people are noticing me, you know, and wanting to be with me, and kind of like that whole piece of it. So, so absolutely, travel's huge. I think that that's only just an aspect of it, though, because, like, police officers don't travel like that.
No, but then you also have that element of the intense pressures and the traumatic things that you're seeing, the situations that you are navigating at work, right? And like, how to bring those home. How do you resolve what you see at work, and then you're coming home, and that, like I said, it's its own other level of operations. How do you connect that? How do you lay down what happened there and yet still invite your spouse into it at the same time?
Yeah.
You know, because I think that can create such a chasm, right? Like, a lot of times when you're the spouse of someone who's a first responder, I can't fully understand your world, nor do I want to, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know, and, but, like, in the supporting role in that, like, I also care about you. And and so I want to be able to come alongside and encourage and...
So I think that I think this is where a lot of people get it wrong. A lot of law enforcement, whether you're female or male, whatever you are, a lot of law enforcement get it wrong, because you can be open and about your feelings. You can be open about, you know, all those things, emotions.
Wow, know, Brad, this sounds very, you know, all the language that all the guys are like, wait a minute.
it really is ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm not coming home. Like, this is not what I'm talking about emotions. Like, I'm going to share with Lisa, like, how I feel. What happened during the day? What happened on that call out? Like, what'd you feel? Like, these things I want to share with you because I want you to understand where my brain is, right? Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, you're, besides me praying and going to the Lord with all my needs and, you know, all these emotions and all these things, you're the next thing, the next, you know, not outlet, but my support. Mm-hmm. And so I need you to know where I'm at. I don't want to hold on to it. And it's not something that's weak at all. And I think at least where I'm at in my office, that mentality has changed a lot, a lot since I've been in. It's changed a lot over there in a very good way, where guys are very more open. Of course, they still, you know, keep stuff because we're guys, right? But they're very more open to thought processes, like how am I feeling, like what, like being very introspective,
like starting to see the impact that it has on every
the
area,
the
long
term impact, and then yes, what it does do in all areas of your life to hold on to these things. Yeah, this world, like, you know, my dad, retired from the Border Patrol 32 years, 31, 32 years. I know my mom's going to be mad. I got that wrong. Somewhere around there, a long, long time. And he never brought work home, at least that I saw.
Right.
Like, I never knew if he was in a, you know, whatever situation he was in. I never knew if he'd ever been a shootout. Never knew, mm-hmm. you know, I never knew those things. I don't even know if I ever asked him any of those questions, but he didn't bring that home.
Right.
Right. And so I had told myself, I'm going to be the same way. Like, I don't want to bring that stuff home. Right.
Do you think it's portrayed as like strength then?
Well, I'm going to say this, though, this caveat, because I don't know what my dad told my mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm looking at it from a kid and kid's perspective, right? Yeah. So that's how I perceived it. I'm like, well, then I'm just going to leave work at work and home's home. Like, these are two different entities, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. they're so different. They're not. They have to be merged together, right? If I'm a – being a husband makes me better at what I do for a living. Being a father makes me better at – what I do for, you know, like all these things coincide, right? What I've learned through all my experiences and everything I put myself through makes me better at stuff at home, mm-hmm. right? It all balances. It should balance.
It should, right?
So I never looked at it as a strength and or a weakness. I just thought, like, this is something you don't do, right? Because there's things you see. And I'm not a victim, all right? Like, I don't want, like... Not a victim.
Brad doesn't like that word, guys, you know.
Well, I'm not a victim. I don't have, you know, PTSD or anything like that for stuff that I've seen. I've seen car, you know, it cops, regular cops. Like, I was a Border Patrol agent, regular cops. Like, you roll up on a car wreck, you're the first one there. Like, you see all the mess, right? Shootings, whatever, right? And it was the same in our side. You know, we'd see all the first messy things mm-hmm. and you know, just a lot of gross stuff, right? That
kind of see, like, the worst moments for people, the worst.
Yeah, either the worst, you know, like, moment for someone or, yeah, someone's been attacked, someone's victim of X, someone's in a car wreck, someone's drowned, some, you know, all of these things, right? Like, yeah, you see, like, it
their
all.
Worst moment is your and guys' so, is every day.
Yeah, like, so I didn't want to bring that home in the sense of, like, how do you bring that home, right? Like, how am I going to tell you? Like, oh, today I saw X, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. And I think it was like one time I finally opened up to you about some stuff because I thought it was interesting because I was starting to learn. I was like, what is this? Like, why? What is it? I'm not morbid. I'm not callous. You know, I did get callous for a little bit, but I'm not callous in the sense. I'm not morbid. I don't, you know, have a I don't joke about these things, but then in those environments, that is a mechanism you use,
right?
And so there's I'm not going to share them on here, but there's stories I've told you where they, if you tell someone that's not even close to this realm, they would look at you like you're a psycho and that you have no heart. And they I mean, honestly, and it's like, no, it's the opposite, man. Like, this stuff, like, hurts so bad, but it was a coping mechanism that you would mm-hmm. use.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that that's what it was. It was just all of us laughing about, yeah, you would consider it like morbid.
Yeah.
Right. And it's horrible to think about that, but that's how, like, this is the world. I mean, not just us. I imagine.
Because you're dealing with all of the, like but, you said, worst case.
But
stuff.
I imagine this happening to, you know, to like the, all the battles in the Bible, like all those times where these warriors are out, like, running around doing stuff. I would imagine they were joking about things too, because it is I think it's a human coping mechanism that we use. So it was something that the stressor of seeing what you shouldn't be seeing, even though you signed up to do those things, right? The stressor of that. And then you're like, well, what's the best way I can cope with this is just laugh about it. But then I started kind of opening up to you a little bit more on that. And then plus, you know, reconciling and reconnecting our marriage, it was like, all right, now I need you to know, like, I want you to know where my head is. I want you to know what we're doing, you know, if I could tell you, right? And there was very rarely times where I couldn't say, like, what we did.
At least give an overview.
Yeah. Yeah. But I wanted you to be, I wanted to share it with you, not just so you knew.
Yeah.
That was and basically all it was.
Protected me from a lot of details. And I think we, you know, we mentioned this several episodes ago that you can share without having to share everything. Absolutely. And I think that that's a really big key. And honestly, it's so helpful on, you know, if you're a spouse, like on the supporting side of things, to have an overview of where your headspace is, right? Because what happens is you see someone, it seems like they're just shutting down, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like that compartmentalization thing that happens, right? And you're watching them and it just seems like, oh, okay, the typical response, like, how was your day? Oh, good, fine. And you may have gotten through all of this like horrible stuff, right? But you don't even know how to process it yet.
No.
So then you're unwilling or unable to put it into words. And I think it's good and healthy for someone to recognize when they're in those spaces. And you can say that, you know, you can even say those things like, man, it was a long day. I don't actually even have the words to process it yet. But if you could just, you know, pray for me, that would be great. Yeah. And I think in a supporting role with that, you have to be okay with that too, you know, because I think, and I'll pick on women specifically, and I know this is on both sides of the coin for people, but, you know, we have a tendency to be like, well, I don't know anything if I don't know all the details. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, but that you don't sometimes for your own sake don't need to know all the details, especially if your husband's in the first responder world, because like the images I know that you guys have to contend with, that, you know, first responders in general have to contend with, because you're coming up on the worst case scenarios that, mm-hmm. you know, somebody might face one time in their lifetime, and that's your guys's every day. You know, you contend with those images. You have to, your body contends with those images. You have to.
Yeah, you get desensitized for sure. And I think that that's probably a certain level of not communicating it, just because you don't think it's a big deal anymore. But I think that that contributes to divorce rate in law enforcement, right? But it's all, if you look at this, like the traveling is physical distance. This non-communication is distance, like, you know,
emotional
distancing. Yeah. And if you're distancing at all from your spouse, like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to end up distancing yourself out of a marriage.
Yeah. And, so true.
And
so
it's, true. Yeah. And it's scary because it's like, man, if you would just communicate what goes on, that's it. Like communicate. And it's not about, like you said, I don't need to tell all the gory details of all the whatever, but I could just say like, yeah, we rolled up on this today. I got called out for this, or this is what happened when we showed up to the ex. Like, yeah, it was, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And then but you don't have to get into detail. And then if that person does want to open up, I think that's where a spouse is like, you have to be willing to step into that mess with them. And I think that there's a lot of spouses that are willing to do that, but I think that's not communicated.
Mm.
Right. Because I don't want to dump everything that, you know, all that stuff on you at all. But if I want you there with me and I need like some level of support, and we got to figure this out. Right. You're my one.
Yeah. Right?
Like that's, you know, and I don't know how people, you know, do this job specifically and handle all the things they handle without being a Christ follower. Mm. Like, I don't understand that. And I know it sounds counterintuitive because a lot of law enforcement will say the same thing, and they'll say, that's why I'm not a Christ follower.
Mm.
Because all the evil and the bad that happens in this world, why does God allow it? Blah, blah. And it's like, well, just go back to Genesis 3. And this is, you know, we brought this,
mm.
you know, we did this. Ever since then, God is like waiting, right, to rescue us from this earth. Like this is what's, you know, hoping that
patient with us,
just like we talked about, just like it was talked about at church today. But, you know, I think that that's a huge aspect of it. And then also, I know there was like other points on there.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say too, even that you were saying, you talking about this aspect of the person you talk to. So what happens if you don't talk to your spouse too, is you have that trauma bonding with other people.
Yeah. So there's two ways of that. So I'll go all the way back to selection. Like if you look up selection, if you don't know what that's about and you look it up and you read why, right? There's the surface answer of why is because you want to select the right people for your, you know, unit, mm-hmm. right? I need these attributes. I need these characteristics, and everyone else can leave. Mm-hmm. I don't want to deal with them. And that is basically at the rawest level. That's what selection is. The other side of that is those guys that I went through selection with, those 13 dudes, and I worked closely out of those 13 with a couple of them. Other than that, we went to like different areas in the United States, right? And there's a whole breakdown of it, whatever. And I've worked with them, not closely, but I've worked with a lot of them. But those dudes, when I see them, that's my family, mm-hmm. right? Like all the guys are my family, whether I like them or not, right? All the guys are my family. And then the team you're on specifically, yes, there's a bond there. There's a huge bond there because you suffer together. You go mm-hmm. through selection, like you suffer together.
Right.
You know, there's guys on the team now that I've been through like intense situations from, and just from that, there's a bond.
Yeah.
Right. You know, there's one dude in particular I'm thinking of, like there's a deep bond we have together, and it's not like we have to talk every day or anything like that. It's just like, we're just good friends.
Yeah.
And I mean, deeper than that, but it's because we went through some stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, it came out on the other end and it was like,
there was, man, a breaking that happened.
Yeah.
That,
you yeah. know, And so that I 100% agree with what you're saying. And then if you can't, you know, that's the bonding that you're talking about, right? Like, and of course that's inevitable in what I was talking about. But if you don't have anyone else to talk, like your spouse, you don't have your spouse to talk to you about that, and they can't, I'm not trying. So even your spouse can be that person, even if they don't fully understand.
Yeah, you don't have to understand to listen and yeah, support.
And so I think that's a big piece that you need to grab and really hold on to. You don't have to fully understand what they've gone through and or what they're feeling. But if you're there and mm-hmm. getting that communication from them, that's huge, because that outlet is going to spew somewhere else. And I think, like, while we were talking about this, something that popped in my head with, because I don't know the statistics of infidelity. I know that that's probably up there.
Yeah.
Though I'm not going to say it's in that 60 to 75% range. That's the divorce rate. But I'm sure the infidelity piece is up there. And I think this is why. Because
yeah, all, it says 58% is infidelity.
Yeah, because of all that stuff that you hold on to, and then you go try to like other outlets. You try other outlets to get rid of it. Right. Or to forget about it. Right. Whether mm-hmm. you turn to alcohol or just party, whatever it is. Right. You're just trying to forget about it. And then in those states, you have someone that you could talk to or that's interested in you. That's not worried about what you've gone through or worried about how your emotional state is or worried. And so you can just suppress it. You know, does that make sense
yeah.
to me? Like where, even if you're distant from your spouse, like they still love you and they want to try this connection, and you're like, I don't want to talk about it because I'm, you know, supposed to be super tough and now I'm not supposed to talk about this and whatever. Mm-hmm. But then at some point that's all going to spew somewhere. And if it doesn't, you're going to just push it down to where my outlet is, let's say my outlet's going to the gym, which exercise is actually very, very, very good outlet. But if you're, marriage is breaking and then your outlet's the gym, you're putting yourself in that same position as if your outlet was the bar or if your outlet's like the club or whatever, you know, like name it, mm-hmm. where you're putting yourself in a position for someone from the opposite sex to come talk to you or that you've made friends with. And then they can quote unquote understand you and they don't need to ask the questions. And also, and then so you start feeling some kind of connection with
right
them.
You understand and
then,
me
yeah and you then also I know one of the things I saw in there was like thrill seeking, you know, and that like this adrenaline junkie thing, and I don't know about that.
I mean, I think it has an aspect, because here's the reality. I think that, you know, you have like, and we talked about this I'm afraid I'm going to say this wrong, but autonomic arousal, right? Which is where your body is producing all these things, but you're so used to high stress situations, right? Yep. Your body's so used to it. I think it begins to operate in that normal zone, right? So even if you're not thinking like I'm thrill seeking, there's this aspect of like your body just begins to kind of run in that zone.
No, I could see that maybe. Like that's that I'm trying to put it in my life when I was running around, and I think that's what it was. That could have been what it was. You know, I kind of talk about it. If you guys haven't heard, like you can go to episode 80. I'm sure I talked about it in that episode. But where we were going to do like some, we were doing like some really, like stuff I signed up for.
Yeah.
Like we're doing.
The crazy stuff.
Yeah. Right. And then that night ended up right through a lot of compromising. But that night I'd end up at a bar or like, you know, bar club, whatever you want to call it. Right.
Yeah.
Walking in with me and two other dudes. And it's like when you walked in there, it was like the record stopped. And everyone would look at you. And it wasn't because we're not the biggest dudes or anything like that. We're just normal looking dudes. But I think it was the way we carried ourselves because we were just out doing some like awesome stuff and then going to, you know, and so then you get
kind of riding that adrenaline surge.
Really. Yeah. You keep I guess, right? If I have to look back and think about it, I guess that could be what it is, riding that adrenaline all the way out and just looking for it. Because I wasn't sitting there looking for my next fix intentionally.
Right.
But maybe I was, you know, and it's just, I don't know. It was hard. Like I was reading that article, skimming it over, kind of getting the highlights of it when they talked about like adrenaline seeking and this dysfunction of the hormone from all the stressors coming out and, you know, all these things
that
where
fight and flight.
Yeah. Your fight and flight. And then that becomes your norm, right? Like my norm is elevated. And I think it's still elevated because like there's times where you've told me, you know, I think you're more used to it now, but there's like more, quote unquote stressful. I wouldn't think they're stressful, but quote unquote stressful situations, like in our lives, normal day to day walking around. And I don't react like you would even think I'd react.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and on the other side like, of things, I feel like you can operate in a more like I don't love being in crowds with you.
Well, I don't like being in crowds.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, because your response system is so elevated at that point, you're looking around, you're kind of constantly anticipating that something could potentially go wrong.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest, like, it sucks. Like, I don't know how, like, you could have, like, we got
to. You don't know how to turn that off.
I don't know how to turn it off.
Yeah.
And it does suck. And it, but then I think I get nervous because I'm like, well, if I do turn that off, then. Like what happens, right? You know, so I don't, but I don't know how to turn it off. But I do think that all those stressors, all that stuff, if my outlet is my relationship with Christ, that's it. Like, yes, physically, I lift weights. I do all those things that I need to do, right? Physically. I train, you know, on all the stuff I need to train on. Like all those things, like, yes, that there is validness to that. One, I want to be ready for my Super Bowl. Right. When it comes to, it helps you like detox and like process your stuff.
Yeah. Stress reliever.
Yeah. It's a stress reliever and it's a known like scientific fact stress reliever. Yes. But I handle all the things I handle because I put everything in my walk with Christ. Like I have to.
Yeah.
Right. I can't not do that. And I see guys that stress out about stuff where I don't stress out about it, not because I'm better than them, but it's because I don't put my trust in that.
Yeah, like, I know God's with me. Saw, and I want to make sure I mention this because, you know, as someone who has kind of just been this, you know, that support system for, you know, 20 some years, and it becomes both of our normal, right? Mm-hmm. I have people ask me all the time, like, you know, how do you handle this aspect of your husband going out into the things that could potentially, you know, he could lay down his life and do all these things. And on this side of things too, I think your walk with Christ is so essential, right? Because it is this like, and I have prayed for you and I've seen it, right? Where this aspect of like this covering around you, like the mighty warrior angels, yeah. you know, that I've just been like, God, please just place right in front yeah. of him. And we've literally physically seen those things come to play, you know, but, I did see in you as you dove into that, you know, you really going after Christ, mm-hmm. your heart shifted from, because there was a period of time, I would say that when you were at home, I felt the longing for you to be at work.
I felt it.
Yeah. It wasn't that you verbally were saying anything, but I think maybe even in that, like,
well, yeah. Well, I mean, here's where it comes from. Honestly, it's, I mean, it's kind of like the FOMO, mm-hmm. right? Like the fear. What is it? Fear of missing out. You know, and it's especially the team I'm associated with. It's we believe that we're the best at what we do, and so why would I don't want anyone else there at whatever's happening, right? Like it should be us, like we should be there. Or if, or yeah, and so you'd feel this, like, you know, you're seeing something on the news and all of a sudden I'm like, what am I doing here?
Yeah,
like we should be
there,
like let's go right now, you know. And it had nothing to do with getting away from family. But it had everything to do with this is what I've trained. That's why I talked about kind of just, you know, very briefly, like the Super Bowl, right? Like I've trained for the Super Bowl, right? For my Super Bowl, my own Super Bowl. I've been training for it. It might never come, or it might come once, right? And if you're not ready at that one time, like that could be a losing Super Bowl, right? And you don't get to walk away from it. I was gonna laugh, make a joke, because the way you handle stress is you just go to sleep, and then I come home and I'm like,
I don't normally handle stress.
She is sleeping. I guess I'll just stay up a little longer and then
stress
go
and sleeping, because that sounds like I just go to sleep when I'm stressed. No, what you're particularly talking about is a situation that you were in a shootout, and yeah. and when I knew you were safe, I went to sleep.
Yeah,
and it was like late at night.
But I came home when I knew you were safe. Nope.
Yeah, it was such an assurance. Like, he's safe, he's done his job,
yeah,
he's been protected, and like there was just that rest.
No, it was a beautiful, you know, I joke with you about it, but it was like a beautiful thing. I could see like the peace of God, really.
Yeah, that's 100% what it was.
Oh, he's good. Okay.
He's safe. I'm going to go to bed now. When you were out there and I didn't know you were safe, like, I was going to war. Yeah. Like, I had people around me going to war. Yeah. Like, that, because that's what matters, you know. It's like, you know, whether someone realizes it or not, that support system is like, you go to war in a different way, mm-hmm. right? But anyways, to get back to what I was saying, yeah. that piece of me feeling like that, which is hard when you're on the side of things and you're at home, but you see your spouse kind of have this longing to be somewhere else, even if it's not verbalized, yeah. it's a really weird place to be. 'Cause part of you can understand, like, yeah, you were trained for that, but you already feel like so much of your life has been kind of like stolen, right? Yeah. Special moments, stolen, yeah. birthdays, holidays, countless. You know, yep. all the things that you haven't been a part of. And so then when you're there and you kind of still feel like pieces of that mm-hmm. are being stolen by even the, yeah. that, anyways, I saw a shift happen in you as you went mm-hmm. after Christ.
Yep.
This ability to be where you were at.
Yep.
That is a really beautiful thing. And I think really spiritually, I saw that just change in you as you didn't define what you did as who you were,
yeah.
right? This, that's what I do for a job, but it is not who I am.
Yeah.
When I started to see that, then when you were at home, you were home. Not that you didn't, you know, love your job, what you mm-hmm. did, but it, all of a sudden you loved your home, your spouse, yeah. your kids more than that. That was like a really big deal for me as your wife, was to mm-hmm. see that shift.
Yeah. I think that just kind of stewing on this whole topic of infidelity, divorce rate, and law enforcement specific and all those things. And there's a litany of reasons. Like, you looked up articles and it's like the automatic, you know, arousal, the PTSD.
Work environment.
The work environment. The shift work. The stressors. The this and that. And there's and they're not, they're valid, right? But all really, like, the more I sit on this, I'm like, man, if you're a cop and you're listening to your first responder or your first responder's wife, like, get them to listen to this, because this is it right here. Like, give up the pride and just share, cry, whatever it is. Yeah. Like, be open like that to your spouse. Be open like that. Like, my kids know I cry. Like, they know I cry. Yeah. I don't care. Like, are we not past the macho, like, seasons, right? Of, like, I'm a man. I have to be like this. I have to do this. You know, like, are we not past that? Like, are we not past, you know, the 50s, the 40s, right?
Like, I mean, there's elements that, like, obviously are good and bad about those eras, but like the idea.
Well, no, I'm not saying that those eras were bad. Yeah. Those are the greatest generations and the people that stepped up to war. I'm not talking about that, but what I'm saying is, like, communicate.
It's okay to have,
like,
those,
because there's a lot of older people now, when you talk to them, they're like, you know, you don't need to, you know, this is how marriage goes. And it's like, well, you could have a better marriage.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, like,
and you know what made me sad too, when we were going through stuff, is like, you're seeing, you know, first responders and the divorce rate and, you know, higher than the national average by a significant amount. And instead of seeing people go like, you guys can do this.
Oh yeah. That article
I'm finding article after article of how to support people through divorce.
To make it easy. And what did they say? The right divorce,
yeah, it's, or it's whatever. It's not that you're trying to prevent divorce, it's that you want to divorce the right way. Like, my goodness, like, if you're listening to this and you're just feeling like, you know, this wanting to give up on your marriage, it grieves Brad and I's heart.
Yeah,
because we know that, I mean, there's very few marriages that I believe cannot be resolved on this side of heaven, right? Like you need to get out, you know, like,
yeah.
And I mean, this side of heaven, I just mean, like, you know, God is a restorer of people, but when it comes to marriages, like, if you're willing to go after Jesus and you're willing to do the work, there's just few things that cannot be worked through.
Like I said, those points, you can look them up, like Google, like, law enforcement, you know,
I'll link
divorce rate or whatever, but all those points are great and they have, like, great things in them. But really, when it comes down to it, really, this is the bottom line. Like, you signed up, right? If this is the way you're wired, right? If it's not the way you're wired, look in the mirror and quit and leave, because you're putting people's lives in danger. This is if you're wired this way and you're meant to do this job, right? First respond, whatever agency you're part of, whatever it is, you're meant to do this job, then do it, and do it for God. Do it to the best of your ability. Be the best person you could be doing it, and give all the glory to God, right? Like, that's it. So take all those excuses, all the things you've seen that are evil. Like, I've seen some horrible things, all the stuff you've been through, all, you know, the little kids that are left alone, all the, you know, all the evil, right? Bag it all up. Take it. Those are just excuses that are used to try to say, to point to something that fell off, that your marriage is now going to be a statistical divorce. Mm-hmm. Or that those are the reasons why I stepped out on my wife to have relations with this female I don't even know that well, just because of all these things. Because I'm a cop. Look at all these things. That this is why I did it. Mm. Like, those are all really just excuses. Like, if you truly want to, and I am speaking specifically to men right now, so don't, you know, get mad at me. But if you're truly wanting to man up, like, those are really just excuses. They help you better understand where you're mentally at. But ultimately, you need to lay all that down and talk to your wife. Bring your wife into that. Bring her into that. Like, you don't have to, I don't have to tell Lisa how the dead body looked when I found it. I don't have to tell Lisa how the guy looked after we shot him. Like, I don't have to give those specifics, but I can share what I felt at those times.
Yeah. And there's, I can, and there is so much help too.
And I can process that.
Yeah.
With God, I can process that through prayer. Then I can outwardly process that with you.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm having a hard time with this. Mm-hmm. You know, this is normal stuff. This is normal stuff. I'm not talking about wokeism and being a baby and being a victim and all those things. I'm talking about, like, these are normal. You sign up. They should tell you up front. You sign up for this. This is what you're going to get. This is what you're going to get. You're going to get all these things. You're probably going to have addiction to caffeine. You're going to have a sleeping disorder. Your testosterone is probably going to get super low because of your sleeping disorder, because of you eat horrible, because you eat here, then you eat, you know, 5 hours later, something else, like all these things. And then your adrenaline goes from 0 to 100, then back to 0. Then an hour later, back to 100, mm-hmm. then back to 0. And that's your shift. Like, that is like up and down, up and down, up and down. So all these things that happen to you, yes, this is real. Mm-hmm. These dysfunctions, this PTSD stuff, this, like, all these things, these are very real things that happen to you and hinder your judgment making and hinder all this stuff and all these stressors, and you bag this and you hold on to it. But ultimately it's like, yes, I signed up for that, but I can fix my eyes on my walk with Christ. I can lay my pride down and I can just man up and say how I feel. And share my emotions how I need to share them, and bring my spouse in this with me. Mm. And just, even if it's literally, I just need you to listen. And I don't know if you're going to fully understand me. And I remember sharing stuff with you, and I was like, I know I'm going to sound super weird saying this. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I'll share one on here, because in case someone's doing this, there was something like, yeah, I was in a shootout. And we were victorious. Like, we came out on the other end unscathed, like, finished it, right? Yeah, absolutely. And the next day, and I don't think the next day I shared, I think I had to process it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it was a few days later, I looked at you and I was like, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, that I want to go do it again. That's real. It had nothing to do with what happened, because I really had no feeling for that guy, right? He signed up, I signed up, and this is what happened, right? So I really didn't have any feeling for that guy, or no remorse, anything like that. But, and it was nothing about wanting to be away from my family or put myself in this, like, you know, like, cheat death. Mm-hmm. That was nothing like that. It was just this, I want to do it again. And I held on to that for a while. And it didn't affect me in the sense of, like, I started being crazy or drinking or anything like that. It was just something that I held on. I was trying to figure it out. Like, why? You know, why? And then, randomly, I'm at work, and there was one a couple months before that that I wasn't involved in. And one of those dudes came up to me and was like, hey, man, how are you doing? Which, like I said, the culture's changed a lot, right? And, you know, we asked each other, like, how are you doing? How are you processing? What's going on? He's like, hey, man, how are you doing? I was like, no, I'm doing fine, man. And I go, you know what's weird, though? And I kind of, like, held my breath a little bit. But then I'm like, well, no, he's in the same boat I'm in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're all on the same team. I'm like, you know what's weird, though, man? I was like, I want to go do it again. And he was like, same. And I'm like, I'm not processing this yet. Like, I don't know why, right? But then the more I processed, the more I understood. It's like, it goes back to what I said. Like, we trained for this. We want to stop evil. We want to be put in these situations. Like, that's how we're wired. That's yeah. the wire we have. And so then I started understanding. And I had other people speaking in my life that were, you know, Christians, God, you know, men of God that have done a lot more than I have ever done.
That's another piece of the puzzle. Like, yeah. Find people that are
But
are
you have to be willing
to share.
Right? Yeah. You have to be willing to open up and just lay that down. And so I think that you can make up any excuse you want to make up right now. Man, yeah, I can't do that. But really what it comes down to is, one, first, give your life to Jesus if you haven't done that. Like, be all in on that. And then second, just man up and just communicate with your wife. Mm-hmm. Like, break those barriers down of, like, this hardcore, you know, 1980s cop, right? Like, just break those barriers down. And I'm not, like, this doesn't make you weak. This doesn't make you a tree hugger. You're not tiptoeing through the tulips. Nothing mm-hmm. like that. This is real.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you want to be a warrior. You want to be a Christ follower. You want to be a great husband. You want to be the protector. You want to be a great father. You want to one day be a great grandfather. Like, you need to let this stuff out.
Yeah,
stop holding on to it.
Yeah, because your body holds on to it and all that other stuff. Well, I think maybe we need to plan on this, like, as a part two for this, is to actually have some things that you can do as, like, a first responder on both sides to actually help you to either avoid and or, you know, recover from that, some guardrails. So just throw a topic out for this next week. All right. We'll see you next week.